This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Maria.
And I'm Luc Olivier du Meublé.
And what's our topic this week, Luc Olivier?
This week, I'll do a small recap of specific topics from 2015.
Awesome. But first, as usual, we have follow-up.
We love follow-up.
Yeah, we do. I have two quick items of follow-up. Well, actually three. One is a little longer than the others. We've been talking about weird stuff that you can find on Twitch over the last few episodes. And the day after we recorded the last episode, I found a new crazy thing. It's called Twitch Plays Music, and it is on the Twitch channel by Tom Cosm, T-O-M-C-O-S-M. And basically what he did is he hooked up Ableton Live, which is a music sequencer and a digital audio workstation, and basically mapped everything to chat commands in Twitch. So now everybody can try and make songs together on Twitch, except of course everybody is trying to make their song, so it sounds like crap most of the time. But it's a nice experiment that basically you can see creative people go in and out of the chat room and try to make it sound less like crap than it currently sounds like. And at the very least, it's a very interesting project because it's more of a creative one than Twitch Plays Pokemon, where there's an end goal. This, it's just, well, be creative, and we're seeing the results of what that is in Twitch. So that's the first item of follow-up. The second thing is I wanted to ask you about something I saw about the Apple TV, which is apparently Facebook has an SDK that developers can integrate into their apps so that you can use Facebook to log in and make the login process a little simpler than the painful job of entering a password with the Apple TV remote. So I heard you've actually tried an app that uses this.
I did not. I think the only app I used that had this type of workflow was the YouTube app, and they did add this workflow on the old Apple TV third generation. But let me think. Oh, yeah. So I was referring to that for... what's the game? Oh, for the Rayman game. The Rayman game has a feature where it is a free-to-play game. So obviously they have a feature for you to log into Facebook and do stuff free-to-play game does.
Spam with your friends.
Your Facebook account, indeed. And it was referring to this facebook.com/devices URL. And then with the same logic. So the gist of it is... And it is the same for the YouTube app. The gist of it is you go on your computer, you make sure that you're logged in into the specific service. So for this example, it will be a Facebook. And you go to an URL. Most of the time, it is facebook.com/devices. And if I recall correctly, for YouTube, it is still youtube.com/devices. And then it detects that you're currently logged in. And on your... TV screen, you'll see random characters, and the action of kind of pairing your Apple TV app with your account will log you in into that account on the Apple TV app. So it is kind of a weird way of doing like secure stuff while still being convenient for the user and not entering your long random characters password with the Apple TV remote.
Yeah, I'm sort of surprised that the workflow doesn't just like, well, no, I was going to say like they should set a notification or use handoff on your phone and just say, hey, this app is trying to access your Facebook account on the Apple TV, allow or decline. But the problem is if you're not entering your user ID into the TV, then it doesn't know where to send that notification necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. And if you contrast that with some of the feature in Apple's SDK to do about of the same, but with all iOS devices, you can do authentication with your iCloud account. Like there's a way to have an anonymized account that is linked per app, per iCloud ID. So you have your iCloud account configured on your phone, and then you can have a user token per application, and each application can request this token. It feels to me that they could be able to do this, but I'm sure what happens most of the time is they don't want to use Apple's API because they want to have control on this process.
Well, in the case of Facebook, it wouldn't necessarily work, because for the iCloud thing to work, they have to be in the same container. And since Facebook only owns the Facebook app container and not the container of the apps with the Facebook SDK, it wouldn't work that way.
Oh, I see, I see.
But anyway, so I thought I would bring that up because one of the big pain points of the app, of the new Apple TV, is you have to log into all this stuff and the remote app still doesn't work on it. So you have to type everything in with the remote yourself, and it's a big pain in the ass. So people would rather use these kinds of methods. What I found interesting, and I noticed this because I was trying to find a feature in the terrible new YouTube iOS app and didn't find it. But instead, what I did find is you can actually do the device pairing right in the YouTube app with that feature.
Yay, Skype, yay!
Okay, and the last follow-up is something that I announced last week. On November 27th, I discontinued EOS, my GIF generator app.
Sad phase.
Yeah, so there are a bunch of different things that are the cause of this, but the primary cause is basically, Tumblr built GIF generation into their app for free, and that is maybe my biggest audience of people who could potentially use my app, so they have no reason to buy my app at all. I could go and make it free with in-app purchases. The problem is, it's a huge risk, because depending on how you model what you expect to happen, there's a scenario that's possible where it gets popular enough that you have free users that are using the app, but the ads don't necessarily pay for the hosting they're using. And the in-app purchases might not actually be purchased enough to actually fund the hosting. So then you're just taking a loss and you're not actually making any money. And that's not really a viable business. And specifically for GIFs, file size is very important. And GIFs are generally large files because GIFs are a terrible compression technology that uses a lot of space. And that is why Twitter and other websites that host, quote, GIFs actually host MP4s and WebM files. Unfortunately, that gives super shitty results on Twitter because their compression is shit. But it does actually save a lot of bandwidth. So that's understandable from a business standpoint. So there's that. There's also that I am currently in the job interview process.
Ooh.
And I can't really say much about it because I still don't have the call. I'm waiting on a call basically from my maybe future boss to actually confirm that I'm coming in for work at the end of the week. Currently, they're running background checks and whatnot on me. So hopefully they don't find anything too incriminating. So...
They might find this podcast, though.
It's on my resume, so they know about it already.
Nice.
I would like to devote my attention to this contract job. 100% of my time is going to be devoted to that during the day. And I don't want to be distracted with other projects that may or may not be failing. So I am sticking to the side projects that do not generate any money, which is Polyphonic Room, this podcast, and Happy Monday System. And all of the iOS stuff that I have, I am slowly rolling out. I'm slowly phasing out. And we will be talking a lot more about this in 2 weeks. So stay tuned for the next episode. But I just wanted to mention it in passing.
You're ES such a tease.
Discontinued. Yeah, well, it's going to be a big episode, so.
Yeah.
And that's it for my follow-up.
Good. So let's jump on this small recap that I wanted to do regarding this year. So since it will be my last episode of 2015, because like Yannick just mentioned, the next episode will be about some topic we just teased, but it will also be the last episode of Limitless Possibility in 2015. So
I was afraid you were going to say forever.
I could drop that bomb on you at this moment, but no, don't worry about that. When we celebrated our first year, I want to put a second candle next year on the cake. So let's work for that to happen. Yeah. So I've decided to to revisit, I think that will be the best word to say, like to revisit some topics that either were part of full-on episodes or maybe part of follow-up and mini topics. And the first one I wanted to start with is video games.
Yay! So
I'm sure you'll be happy about that. But sadly, for me, and maybe for my video game taste, 2015 has been a slow year. Like, the main event regarding video games in 2015 for me was, and it still is, because I've put that on a hiatus for a while, for a bit, but I'm in the process of going through The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D. So, but all of this recently changed. And you know what happened last week?
Yes, I do.
So, on episode 3, Yannick wanted to speak about his shiny new toy, which was his PS4. So, a year ago, Yannick decided to buy a PS4, and the main reason was it was to buy it early to play games like Destiny, which relies heavily on server feature and it relies heavily on a software component. So you wanted to get a PS4 early in its life cycle to enjoy the most of those types of games.
And it's not just the server component, it's also you want to get the game while your friends are playing the game, right? You don't want to wait until, yeah, the servers are still up, but nobody you know is playing, so now you have to team up with strangers. That sucks.
Yeah,
which is actually sort of the situation I'm in right now, because all of my friends have given up on Destiny for a while. But
and I do have a small story related to that. But yes, what I'm trying to see here is I finally got a PS4. Yay!
About time.
Indeed. So in that episode, in episode 3, I tease about getting one on last year's Black Friday. So let's just put it this way. I got it on this year's Black Friday. So yep, I'm a year late. So I wanted to give initial impression of the PS3 the same way Yannick did a year ago, and I would like you, after my initial impressions, I would like you to maybe give a 1 year review, if like a quick review, if you want, obviously.
I'll try. There are some things that I can't quite explain yet, and I was planning to do an episode on next year, but I'll save some of that for next year, but
sure, and I'm
I'll
sure
still do it.
And I'm sure when you'll do this episode next year, I'll have more to say.
Yeah.
So I did get this nice PS3. There was a good deal here in Canada regarding
PS4. You keep saying PS3.
I'm sure I'll mix them both. So PS4, yeah, because it would be really strange to buy a PS3 at this time, but oh well. So I did get a PS4. There was a good deal during Black Friday, which was related to the Uncharted bundle. And it was related to one of my, maybe not need, but one of my idea regarding the Uncharted series is the next installment of Uncharted, the fourth one, is coming in March. I think it's end of Q1 or beginning of Q2 of 2016. So I wanted to play the first two games. Right now, I only played the third installment, and I really enjoyed it. And also played the Vita version, which reminds me, I bought a Vita game this year. Yeah, it is a non-event, but yeah. So I bought a Vita game this year, and it is the Uncharted for Vita.
Actually, I just realized something. I think I haven't purchased a Vita game this year. Oh wait, no. I did at least one, if not two.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Vita is dead, sadly. So, but I'll come back. The Vita has hope now. So yeah, so I was able to get a good deal on it, and I decided to jump on the deal. So I just wanted to also compare it with when I bought my PS3 a while ago, and it was a while ago. So I was pretty quick to jump on the PS3, And just to give you a comparison, the PS3 got the release in North America in November 2006, and I got mine the Christmas after. So in Christmas 2007. So I was paying the high price, and the main reason why I moved so fast is at that time Sony was still producing PS3 that was backward compatible with the PS2 games, and I wanted to get one of those consoles. And even at this in 2007, there was already rumors that Sony, to lower cost of the PS3, they wanted to remove that feature exactly. So they went from having a PS2 board in the PS3 to having software emulation support and just removing backward compatibility with the PS2.
But the joke is they actually sort of added it back in because they started selling PS2 games on the PSN store. So that's weird. And a related bit of news that came out this week regarding the Vita, which is very similar to this, is they're actually going to be pulling all of the PSP games off of the PlayStation Network store in March in Japan, which is nuts because I think I own more PSP games on my Vita than I own PS Vita games.
Wow, I didn't heard of that. Though.
Well, so far it's only been announced in Japan, so that's probably why you haven't heard about it. But yeah, that seems incredibly strange to me, and I'm probably going to blog about it if I'm not busy talking about Monster Hunter Cross. It's ridiculous.
And I am sure I can guess that Sony didn't give any reason of why they're doing so.
The rumor is they were only doing PSP sales on the Vita as a transitional period. The problem is you can't have this part of your business that's focused on selling classic games on the selling point that they're classic games and then say, oh yeah, but all the PSP games, those were crap. We're going to throw all those away. You can only have PS1 now. That's not good.
Also, they will keep the PS1 games, though.
Yeah, PS1 is staying. PSP is all disappearing. But like, I don't understand the reasoning why, other than, well, it was a transition period to try to get people to buy a Vita by transitioning their PSP games. And now people don't care about PSP games anymore. Asterisk, they actually do.
And they care more about the PSP games compared to the PS Vita games, too. Which makes me sad, but...
Yeah.
Good. So to contrast that with my current PS4, which I bought 2 years after its launch. It was launched 2 years ago in November 2013. And yeah, so I was... And the point here I want to make is at that time, I had a reason to buy a PS3. And that quote-unquote reason, obviously. But let's put it this way. At that time, I felt a bigger pressure compared to now. I'm still enjoying my PS3. We're still waiting for not, I wouldn't say good games, but like games optimized for the PS4.
Yeah, because the joke is you bought a PS4 and all of the games you own are PS3 remasters.
Yeah, if we exclude the indie games from PSN Plus, which those don't count. So yeah, the bundle I got was the Uncharted games, and it includes from 1 to 3, which are all PS3 games. And on top of that, during Black Friday, we're able to get a God of War, which I seriously don't care about it. It was a free game too, so which is also a remastered game. And I'm also planning to buy again The Last of Us, which is a PS3 game that I've already owned, but I heard good reviews about the remaster of it. And obviously I want to play it again. It's been a while. I think I bought it when it launched, and the story of this game is so good that I want to play it again.
And I think the remastered version has the DLC from the original game all packed in there as well, so that sort of gives you a bonus maybe that you haven't played before. I don't remember if you had the DLC before.
I did not play the DLC. That is kind of part why I wanted to play it again, either on the PS3 or PS4, but I didn't know that the remastered version includes the DLC.
I'm pretty sure it does. You should check, but
good.
I'm pretty sure.
I'll check on that because it will give me another argument to... a bigger argument to get it. So yeah, so the main, and I think what made me jump on it is also maybe 2 weeks ago we got a news regarding Gran Turismo.
Yeah, it was like a month ago, but yeah, Gran Turismo Sport was announced for, well, it wasn't, it's really weird what they're doing with Gran Turismo, because it's not clear if Gran Turismo Sport is Gran Turismo 7, or if it's a diversion while they're working on Gran Turismo 7.
Yeah, they wanted to say, they were staying away from saying it was a prologue, and we used to get prologues. Even in North America, which we are most of the time late on prologues, recently they were able to release those prologue pretty fast in North America. And they were not able to say, or they didn't want to say that it was a prologue. They say like, oh, it's a full-on game, but it will rely on online interactions. It will not have all of the feature of a GT game, but it's not a prologue.
Yeah, just for the listeners who aren't gamers, Gran Turismo has this sort of running thing called prologue games, where basically they ship, it's not really a demo, it's sort of like one mode of the game that they ship on a disc with a limited set of maps. And that might sound like a demo to you, but it's actually more substantial than a demo in content, really. But they'll ship that on a disc and sell it for like $30, I want to say.
Yeah, prologues always feel to me that they kind of have the graphics engine working and working the way they want. So they just want to give you a tease of it while giving you some feature of the full-on game.
Yeah, and some prologues are better than others. I'm personally a big fan of the Gran Turismo 4 prologue, which was only released abroad. And of course, I'm going to be that guy who picks the thing that's not released here.
I think I played it at your place.
I have the European version.
Yeah, yeah, so.
That's like a thing that they do. And Gran Turismo Sport, so they're teaming up with, I forgot the name of the automotive sport governing body that they're teamed up with, but basically like the big governing body of automobile racing in the world, they're teamed up together to make Gran Turismo Sport a real sport, in quotes. Which I'm not sure about that, but I'm just excited to play the game because Gran Turismo is my favorite racing game. Oh, okay, second favorite racing game.
Which one is your favorite?
It's a tie between Outrun and F-Zero GX.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I love Sega.
But yeah, I'm really eager to see what they'll do because I'm hearing good reviews regarding the latest Forza, the Forza Motorsport 6. I heard it rocks.
Yeah.
And I don't want to buy a Xbox One only for that game because I've been a Sony PlayStation owner since the PS2 for this exact reason. Like one of my favorite game, and I would say maybe even my favorite game, is Gran Turismo. Especially even at that time, for the realism of their graphics and the way the car worked in their gaming engine.
Yeah, so Forza is kind of weird. Forza, I can't really get into because I don't like the physics in that game, which is a big part of like the muscle memory you use when doing driving games. In fact, I'm so used to Gran Turismo that I have trouble playing games that actually use the triggers for acceleration and braking because I always use X and square for acceleration and brake. But aside from the control issue that I have, Forza sort of splintered into two separate kinds of games. So there's Forza Horizon and there's Forza Motorsport. And Forza Horizon I've been hearing incredibly good things about. And Forza Motorsport, the latest one, I've actually been hearing negative things about them. So most of the Forza fans have actually seemed to go towards Forza Horizon, and I'm not sure what the distinction between the two is. I think one of them is sort of like an open world game, sort of like, well, the recent Need for Speeds have sort of tried to do this in the last few Burnout games as well. I'm not sure I actually like that model necessarily, but it's interesting to think about what is really the big standout feature of Forza to me, and what sort of catches my eye every time I do it, is the crazy car customization options. Like, you can do complete decal paint jobs on your car and put anime girls on your car if you want.
Oh my goodness.
In fact, I follow like one of the three people in Japan who owns an Xbox One, and he keeps posting screenshots of his crazy ass cars in Forza, and I'm like, yeah, that's basically the only reason to own this game.
Oh my goodness. I'm surprised that A, you mentioned anime girls, and B, did a burn on the Xbox One in the same sentence. So that's an achievement.
Yeah.
Good. Poor so Xbox yeah, One. It is a little bit also, like, if we go back to the original point I was making, is it is a little bit stupid to say like, oh, I'm buying it already, even if the game is not out yet. Yeah.
I know a lot of GameCube owners who got bit by that. Who bought the GameCube saying, oh, there's going to be this game on it. And then it sort of never shipped.
Yeah, I did buy the Vita saying that too. So, oh well. But at least it ain't my only reason.
Yeah.
That's my safe bet here. Yet again, I know that Uncharted is not out yet, but it is coming. So hopefully it will get out.
I think next. PS4 is maybe the safest bet of all of the consoles right now, because Wii U is sort of trailing off into the distance and
Don't go on that. I wanted to end on
okay,
that.
Okay, okay, okay. And
good. Xbox, so
I didn't finish my thing.
Go on.
Xbox One is sort of struggling in the market right now. In fact, if you go look at Twitch leaderboards, which is how I more or less gauge how popular games are these days, Halo 5 doesn't actually seem to be as popular as I expected, which is really surprising to me. I expected Halo 5 to be toe-on-toe with Destiny, if not higher, in the rankings, and it's surely because there's also Call of Duty, which is out, and Fallout 4, which is out, which are multi-platform, that probably those are much higher in the list because they've got at least twice the audience just because they're on both platforms and also PC, I guess. So three times the audience. But Halo 5 seems to be doing really poorly, which is a bummer because it actually looks really, really good. And I would love to play it. If someone has an Xbox One and would like to let me come to their house to play Halo 5, I really want to try it out. But Xbox One is sort of struggling, and PS4 is really... they have the bulk of the market right now, and I have no worries that there are going to be tons of great games on this thing. They might not be games that I'm into, but they're more likely to be games that you're into, and that's good for you, because you probably represent more of the gamers on PS4 than I do.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that as a compliment.
Well,
I don't know, but I seriously don't know how to follow up that. It's just like...
the way I mean it, I don't mean it in a derogatory way.
No, I know.
I mean it in a way like, people who self-identify as gamers, well, A, they tend to be horrible people. you can just go see on Twitter for that. But and I self-identify as gamer, but I try to be one of the not horrible ones. But they also tend to have much more specific taste in games, whereas I think that the normal people who don't necessarily identify as gamers but play video games and play video games like Call of Duty, who play video games like Uncharted, which are not baby video games like Bejeweled or something. They're like actual video games. I think those people make up a big part of the PS4 market right now. Whereas people like me who like arcade games, well, we're sort of screwed because we are a dying breed.
Yeah, okay. I won't go that far on arcade games because we'll have the whole episode about that, but I see what you mean now. And I always considered myself a casual gamer, even in the console way of saying that. Like, I've never been, I do enjoy Call of Duty, but the old version, especially the one where you can do those zombie modes that I love to play with my brother, but that's the only mode that I like.
Yeah.
I never enjoyed those games. When I was younger, I used to like Rainbow Six, and I heard good things about the recent game, so maybe I'll try to reconsider those. But I always considered myself just a casual gamer, so I have games that I really love, and that's most of the game that I will play.
Yep.
Good. So now I wanted to highlight two features that I really enjoyed and forgot about them until I bought the PS4.
Yay!
So it is really funny. And I was like preparing my show notes and started to listen to what you said about them. I was like, fuck, right, those features exist. So I remember about the share button, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it is on the controller. And I haven't tried to live stream yet. And I don't think I will. Maybe you'll change my mind on that, but I'm not sure.
I live streamed right before we did this recording, and 5 people joined my stream at the exact same time, and I got really, really nervous because I thought everybody was going to yell at me in the chat for a second.
Good. So, and I see that they have the PS4 supports all of the 3 popular live streaming platforms at this moment. So, they support Stream, Ustream, and YouTube. Yep, YouTube. So, maybe I'll try it at some point. And I'm sure you'll refer me to Twitch if I want to do so, right?
I mean, it's where the audience is.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, maybe in a future episode I will mention one of the stream I did. So, who will say? The feature I really, really wanted to try, part of the share button, is what we call share play. So, just to give a small description of it, is the best way to put it is to do local multiplayer or like local playing of games, but not being local. So the way it works is with one or multiple friends, you can create a party room online, and then you can share your own game from your own PS4 to any of those friends that are part of the party, and they can play this game that you own even if they don't own a copy. And you can and that's where the local part comes in, is like you can quote-unquote pass them the one player controller or the second player controller. It's not, and it won't use the multiplayer online feature of a game. So if I'm recall correctly, if it's a one player offline only game, you could still use it and just like have a friend help you go through a specific part of this game. So Yannick and I tried it, and I did play Drive Club, and Yannick had fun watching me play Drive Club and having fun with the controller vibrating on the desk.
Yeah, I wanted to make a Vine of it, but my phone battery died like the second I pressed the post button, so it didn't upload. That's too bad.
Yeah, and the second game I would say that we played, quote-unquote, was a Destiny. You're still trying to make me play Destiny or make me a Destiny convert. I don't know. I don't know if I'll do it. You said that there might be a demo. I haven't checked if there's a demo. We'll see.
But I mean, I'm not actively trying to get you converted over to Destiny. Like, it's fine if you don't play. I don't care.
That's not what you said when I got the PS4. It's like, you know, you could play on Destiny with me, quote unquote. But the
joke is that the day that you got your PS4, or like 1 or 2 days before it, they launched the referral program for Destiny where you can get exclusive shit for referring a friend. And it has to be like, you can't just use an account that was on Bungie.net before the program went live. So it has to be a completely new person. So it would have to be you, basically, because everyone else I know already has the game.
Yeah. So, yeah. But seriously, I remember saying shit about Sony services, and this service is really good. I don't know if it will stay this way in the coming months, but from that one experience, I was just in awe the whole time. I was like, I cannot believe that it works as it is working right now. The audio quality was great. The video quality was great-ish. Let's just say, like, what I'm saying here is it was a little bit pixelated, but not that bad. So for what was happening in front of me, I would consider the video quality good. Not as great as playing it offline, obviously, but not subpar from any other like video streaming services. Like, you can still have worse video quality on YouTube sometimes, even if you have a good internet connection, because something's happening in the internet.
I should just point out, like, you finished first in the race that you played on Drive Club, and I should say this for the people who haven't played Drive Club: the AI in that game is not particularly forgiving, so it's actually pretty surprising that he finished first in that race, considering he was 150 kilometers away from the console that was actually running the game.
Yeah, and while coming back from work today, I was mentioning that to one of my colleagues that got the PS4 recently. And I was telling him, yeah, I tried that. It's really nice. First thing he asked me, how bad was the latency? I was like, that would be a good question. And then he started to ask, like, did you feel that the controller was unresponsive? I was like, no, I did. The first game I played was a fucking car game, and I finished first. I don't know if I choose the right mode or I was in easy mode. I don't know. But it seemed to me that if I was to have latency problem, I would have run into them meanwhile playing the game. Like,
yeah,
especially this type of game.
Yeah, and it's based on the same technology that runs PlayStation Now, which is their subscription service where you can play PS3 games over streaming on the PS4 and on the Vita and on Bravia TVs. And one of the things that really bothers me about PlayStation Now is they don't really have a demo available to you to test that it works well on your connection. And I've always said, like, they should take, like, the crappiest Crash Bandicoot game and just make it free on PS Now so people can test it. Like, make it something that people wouldn't actually want to play, but they can play to test that it works. And that would be really useful. But I guess SharePlay is sort of a demo for the technology in a way. And if it's as good as you say it is, then that makes me a lot more excited about the prospect of PlayStation Now than I was before when I was uncertain about the quality of the service. Now, the strange thing about PlayStation Now is that most of the games on PlayStation Now are fighting games, and fightings are notorious for having very small, several-frame windows for executing moves, and I'm not sure I would want to play a fighting game over a network connection like that. But for, like, another game that's not necessarily so quick and responsive to controls, like, let's say, a Final Fantasy game that's turn-based, like, that would be perfect. I do?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is a night of Skype issues.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice indeed. So, yeah, you know what? After my experience with SharePlay, I'll try to maybe use it with other friends too, but after my experience with it from yesterday, I will maybe consider trying PlayStation Now.
Yeah.
Like, and even I'm not a fighting game person, but I would maybe try those games just to see, is the latency good?
Yeah, and like recently some of my friends have been saying, hey, we should play Lost Planet 2 co-op together on PS3, and I'm like, oh, that's fun, except I'm on a PS4, so I could actually join into their co-op game playing via PlayStation Now, and if the latency is good enough, I could actually do it, and it wouldn't actually be obvious to them, so I might have to try that out.
Good. I did have a quick question for you, and it was related to this feature. Was it the first time that you tried it?
SharePlay, yeah. I've never actually used it from the other perspective where I receive someone else's game, but it was the first time that I used it to share the game that I was playing.
Okay.
Which is why I was confused at certain points to try to find which buttons I had to press to actually give you the controller and stuff.
Yeah.
But once I found out where it was, it made sense.
Okay, good. Next feature, it's kind of related to this one, is Remote Play. So Remote Play was already existing on the PS3, but was really lacking. So Remote Play is a feature where you could remote play from another device and stream the content of your PS3, PS4 to, for example, a PS Vita. And the main difference between the implementation for PS3 and PS4 is that the PS4, this feature is baked into the OS, and on the PS3 you had to support it. So nobody decided to support it for the PS3, which was
unless you had a hacked PS3 where you could go flip a switch in the OS and enable it OS wide.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's nice. Didn't know about that. But yeah, and I did roll in my notes under Remote Play, welcome back to my Vita.
Well, yeah, I actually agree to some point. Before my Vita's memory card slot died, well, actually even after, because now it has even less of a point, I used it to boot the PS4 and start up Destiny while I was getting ready to go move over onto the couch. Now I have a monitor in my room, so that's less of an issue. But yeah, I was using it a lot for Destiny-related stuff. Stuff that you don't necessarily want to go sit in front of the TV to do, like going to buy stuff from the weekend vendors or checking to see if someone's online. Or I was also using the messaging a lot because we have a group messaging thing for my Destiny clan, and I just check the messages via there because their iPhone app sucks. So that's more or less how I used it.
But all of those, like checking from your on your friend, you could do that on the native app for, on the Vita, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it became an accessory for my PS4.
Oh, okay.
Much more than it became an actual game system. Which, to be fair, that's how Sony has been selling it the whole time, which is maybe why nobody's making games for it.
Yeah, and I did play some of the PSN free games that I got on the PS4. One example of that is the Plants vs. Zombie multiplayer online blah 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 shit, which is pretty funny, by the way. It's kind of a, they call it Garden Warfare. It's pretty funny. But it is a free, quote-unquote, free-to-play app. Or is it a free-to-play?
This is the new one?
I don't know. I know that they got it for free from PSN Plus.
I know I played the PS3 version, but I'm not sure about PS4.
Oh, okay. So, but whatever. But I played this game through remote play, and it worked great too. And it is also funny that I found that the quality was worse compared to SharePlay, which is like this feature is over the LAN network. Like I've seen more video and audio hiccups from remote play compared to SharePlay.
Yeah, it's really strange. I have had similar experiences. Well, I can't compare it to SharePlay, but I think that the connection is really glitchy when I'm inside my house, and then when I use remote play from outside the house, it's super fine, and I have no idea why.
Yeah, regarding the remote play over the internet, I wasn't able to try it because when I tried it today at work, it couldn't find my PS4. So I don't know if there was, I think it's missing a setting or something like that. So I'll have to investigate on that because I think that would be the main reason. Like, this would be the main feature for remote play, just to play the PS4 elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's how they were selling that feature. There was, when they announced PlayStation Vita TV, which, rest in peace, is slowly trickling out of stock everywhere because nobody wanted it, apparently, except for me. Except I still don't own one.
And me. I wanted one, but never bought one.
Well, that's part of the problem. they had like this continuum of devices where you had the PS4 in the living room, you had the PS Vita TV in the bedrooms of the various people, and they could connect onto the PS4 if someone was watching TV or whatever. And then when they left the house, they could always connect back onto that PS4 and continue playing whatever they were playing. So it was part of the vision for the product to use it that way. I mean, I use it from time to time, like when we go to my grandma's for holidays or whatever, I might bring my Vita and play some Destiny on the couch. I won't lie about that. But yeah, it's...
No, I can see a benefit for that feature for somebody like me that travels a lot.
Yeah.
I'm like during weekend these days, I'm always or mostly out of town. So a feature like that where I could enjoy my PS4 on the go is really important. Or not important, but really useful.
And I know that in the Destiny community specifically, a lot of people have bought Vitas specifically for Destiny remote play because there is a character, Xur, which shows up every weekend and sells the rarest stuff in the game. And there were certain guns last year that he sold only twice, one at the beginning of the year and one at the end of the year, and you don't want to miss the week that he's selling the really, really good gun, so you have a Vita and you have remote play on it, and then when you are forced to go to your wife's parents' place or whatever, then you can always drag your Vita along and be sure that you buy that weapon instead of having to spend an entire year waiting for it to be in stock again.
Yep. Now it's time to mention what I wanted to talk about at the end of the PS4 topic. Right now I'm still exploring it. Another thing you mentioned in episode 2 was related to the PSN store and all of the web feature of the PS3 that was way faster, the PS4 compared to the PS3. And right now I would say that yes, those are way faster, and this is a big plus. So before we end on the PS4, I wanted to speak a little bit about the current selection of consoles. You did start to do that with the Xbox One and the Wii U. I won't be able to speak about the Xbox One because I never tried it. But Tony has a Wii U, and he's a big Nintendo fan. And I would say that the Wii U, as it is right now, feels like a Gran Turismo prologue. If you see what I mean. Like, it is a great, like, if you want a not cheap but not expensive console, while Nintendo is trying to figure out what should they do next, it is a great console for that. And with the quality of game that Nintendo launched in the past year, they did lower the price quite significantly in the last year, the Wii U is kind of just, you buy it, and if you use it for a year, that's fine for me. Like, the quality of the game brings as much value as the price of the console. Hopefully that might change in a year when they announce their new console. That's what the rumor says, that we get news regarding the next console in about a year. But right now, as it is if you find a good deal on Wii U, I would suggest you to get one and get all of the Nintendo games, because only Nintendo is making game for it. But their games are awesome.
Yeah, I would be in much more of a hurry to buy the Wii U if I had people to play local multiplayer games with, because I think that's where the Wii U really shines. But right now there's nothing on the Wii U that I'm really in a hurry to play, so I don't really have the motivation to go out and buy a new console. And this, despite the fact that I do have a running wish list for the Wii U, and there are more titles on it than there are on my PS4 wish list. But I have plenty of games to play on the assortment of consoles that I have right now, and I'm probably just gonna wait for the Wii U to be dead and then buy one.
I'm sure right now your list will stop growing.
Yeah.
Compared to your list of wanted PS4 games.
Because the next big video game event is going to be E3, and they are supposed to talk about the NX at E3. So they are presumably going to announce about equal, I would say, number of Wii U titles to end the lineup and launch titles for the NX at that event. I'd say that's reasonable.
Yeah, and I think the big missing game for the Wii U would be the next Zelda game, but I wouldn't count on that for the Wii U, sadly. Like, it feels to me that this game will come on the next console.
Well, they've done the dual release thing before, where they released Twilight Princess on the Wii and on the GameCube at the same time.
Yeah, and
there are issues with that, because, in that case specifically, the control mechanism was completely different, so they basically had to tweak the game significantly in both ways, so it wasn't really the same game.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, they kind of flipped the image.
Yeah, they had to flip the game world, because in one of them, Link is left-handed, but the problem is that doesn't work if you're playing with a motion controller in your right hand, because then it's not consistent. So they had to flip everything over, and yeah, that happened.
Yeah, as a lefty, I was kind of pissed when I heard that recently. Tony and one of his good friends were playing the GameCube version, if I recall correctly, and they're like, the Wii version is kind of because they flipped the game, and like, what? They flipped the game? And then they explained me the whole story. I was like, what? So yeah.
Yep.
And I don't think we'll go through all of the reason why the PS4 right now is a current success. I think Sony got their act together. and finally decided to listen to what people were telling them to do, and it is paying off right now.
Actually, I don't think it's Sony doing a good job so much as it is Xbox shooting themselves in the foot over and over and over again. And then very recently, they sort of have been doing good, except the problem is it's too late.
Yeah,
but it's too late, or they also shoot themselves in the foot at the same time, like they did with Halo Master Chief Collection, which that was the big holiday season game last year, and it was unplayable until basically March.
Because of bugs?
The online kept not working. And that is like the big feature of Halo Master Chief Collection is you can play all the first four Halo games online. And then it's like, oh yeah, except the online doesn't work.
Hmm. Yeah, but when you said that you wouldn't put all of those rewards and congratulations to Sony, they did buy the company. I don't remember the name of this company, but the company that now powers PlayStation Now and all of that stuff. I think they are
Gaikai.
Yeah, this one, Gaikai. They knew that this was coming, and I think they did add a plan, and I love the execution of this plan right now.
Yeah.
Until we learn that it is non-secure, like the PSN was. We don't know. I'm sure it's still badly secured. So that's my main worry right now regarding those cloud features. Sony has a bad track record, but.
And it's unreliable.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Good. So, oh my goodness, we took a long time on video games. That's not unexpected, but yeah.
You should just not ask me my opinion on this topic because it's going to be another episode next year anyway.
Yeah, sure.
And just move on to your next topic.
That's a good idea. So, next topic, which is also from episode 3. The main topic of episode 3 was feelings about the iPad. So I spoke a lot about how could I improve my usage of iOS. And this got me thinking also in the past months what I do with my Mac and how can I bring those two ecosystem not maybe closer together or maybe use those two ecosystem for what they are intended for and help me like lower my expectation and all of that stuff. To put like on a running gag related to my Mac and of and to the fact that I do not update it, we can say that this is now no longer a running gag because I kind of fixed that problem, and that was really easy to fix, obviously, just to update. But personally, I've been really lazy on updating OSs, and it is causing me problems when I want to modify the way I work with my devices. So I've decided during the year to be up to date on most OSs, and lower my time limit while waiting for an update. So right now my Mac is still on 10.10, but the plan is to update it after Christmas, because after Christmas I want to, and early next year I want to tackle one of my biggest personal workflow that I have, and that's photo management. I won't go through photo management that much, but I've seen that there's big improvement I can do. I still don't know what I could do and what would be my outcome workflow, but I want to better leverage the tools that I have right now on the Mac and the tools that I have on iOS to create a new and better workflow. Because my main problem with it is I do it poorly, or I'm just yet again lazy. So what happens is, the best example of that is I've been to Sweden for 6 months during my studies, and I haven't triaged and cleaned up the photos I took during that 6 months. And I came back from Sweden, 3 years ago?
Yep, I've done 3 Japan trips and done all the photo management for those since you've come back.
Yep. So this one is a big problem I want to fix, and part of the discussion I had regarding iOS and forcing myself to use iOS more, I'm learning new tools and a new way of working that could help me lower the complexity of those workflows. And that was kind of part of the problems. Like, I always was a little bit on the OCD side regarding photo management. Like, I needed to go through all of them and then clean all of them. And it is time consuming, and I need to adjust through that. Also, to connect to last week's episode, I want to work on where does the watch fit into those workflow. So all of this comes down to I need to reevaluate how do I use those devices and how to to best optimize those devices to the way that I want to work. So my goals for that in this year and continuing next year will be to optimize my work and then try new stuff at the same time, like to be open to changes. And that's the artist part. So it is a small update on what has been happening with iOS and my feelings about the iPad, like I love to mention on episode 3. And the last point regarding my recap of 2015 is regarding, let's put it this way, Apple development. 2015 has been a big year for Apple platforms, and obviously it's been a year and a half since we got Swift, and 2015 has been a big year for Swift. Lots of improvements, new features, bug fixes, so, and also new platforms. So we did got the WatchKit, WatchKit 2, the Apple TV. So there's lots to learn, and I wanted to go a little bit on what I want to do with those. And what I mean with that is what I've done through the year with those new tools and what I plan to do with. Good. So yeah, that's not the night for the night for Skype. I don't know what's the problem right now, but obviously Yannick was just telling me that everything just screwed up. So I'll just go back a sec. Like I was mentioning, Swift brought new improvements. We got new platforms. We mentioned tons of bugs and problems that we want to see with Swift. And even then, at least for me, it is still something new. And I'm still at that phase where I need to kind of fight the beast in a way. Like, I'm still like worried of all of these new changes. And Yannick, you mentioned that you nearly ship apps using Swift, but you run into limitation of Swift, and then other problem end up like canceling those projects. But this year, especially for Swift, for me, has been exploratory here. Like, I'm starting to use it more. I'm starting to learn these new paradigm whilst them being like, it is something new. I don't want it to change. And it has been a really informative and really important for me just to learn Swift. And what I mean by that is for me to learn something new and find those problems and be like not receptive enough to those changes made me realize that I need to be more open. And it goes back to the same way of updates and we being more happy and open by those changes. And this brings me to something that I want to work on and do regarding those new technologies and the way I work. Is I need to make myself work better with changes. And this is what Swift brought me from 2015. It helped me cope with change better than I used to do.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's like I wanted to touch those small subjects. I don't, especially for the development here, I don't have like specific points, like, ah, that's bad. Because I still feel that when I say that, it is more the, like, I don't want things to change part of me that is speaking. Yes, there's issue with Swift, but it is easy to pinpoint them because it fulfills this I don't want anything to change part of me.
Yeah, and there are some things that are genuine issues with Swift, like the issue I mentioned with WatchOS last episode. But it's not because it's a bad thing that we complain necessarily. Sometimes we complain about things that we love because we want them to be better than what they currently are. And I think Swift is certainly one of those things where I really like Swift. I really like the direction that Swift is going in. I don't necessarily like it as much as the Objective-C free-for-all runtime. I mean, that's a ton of fun, but it also has its risks and rewards. And I think that for certain types of development, Swift is much, much more reliable, and for other things, it just falls apart. And I think we have to be pragmatic and see which things Swift is good for, which things Objective-C is good for, and use the right tool for the job when appropriate. And I think what I've learned this year by becoming more of a Swift purist, where I will try to use Swift and use basically have no Objective-C files in the entire project, is that today the only way to get away with that is either to be insane or to put up with lots of weird issues. Like, I see a lot of purists in the, basically in the startup community, specifically in the Bay Area. There are lots of people who are really going all in on Swift, and they're saying, this is the future. If you are not writing in 2015 every single file in Swift, you are doing iPhone development wrong. I disagree with those people. I'm sorry. But
and I totally agree with you on that. Like, you don't know how much article that I either read or need to read that are like either as cocky as what you just said, like you should ditch Adobe TC, or other people that are more pragmatic say like, here's our experience. And I want to learn from those people that says, here's our experience. What happened? The positive side and the negative side of those.
And I think the way that Swift is right now, it's great because you can have like the majority of your app be Swift and then the few things that can't be Swift be Objective-C files, and you can get away with that. The issue I have is really with the people who say, no, you really have to do everything in Swift. It's the future, so you have to get all the way in right now. Otherwise, you're slowing down progress or whatever. And I'm not going to lie, there's some overlap with the UI view controller extremists who think that UI view controller is poison. And I'm not sure I'm convinced of that as well. But yeah, I think overall Swift is actually really good this year, much more than last year. I know you didn't use it that much last year. I tried to use it for a while last year, and I liked the idea, but in practice, it was just too much of a pain to use. This year, it's a lot less of a pain to use, and in fact, I would want to use it for as much as possible, except for the big pain points. The problem is, most of the time, you don't realize the pain points until you're too far into developing a feature that doesn't really make sense to do it in Objective-C, which I guess is why Playgrounds exist, and you have to get used to go test all these things in Playgrounds first before actually implementing things for real. And I just don't have that mindset built into it. There's also the issue that Xcode also always crashes when I try to use Playgrounds, but that's another issue.
Yeah, and like the feeling I had to cope with this year while learning Swift was, I think the best way to say it is the last time that my toolbox changed was when I learned Objective-C development. And now that I'm using all of those tools, all of those skills, the toolbox is changing. I'm like, no, no, don't change it. Don't change it. But if I want to stay not up to date, but if I need to cope with that, I need to make sure that I'm ready when the outside world says, this toolbox should go away. Like, throw it in the trash and start with a new one. And this has been a learning process for myself, just like as a person that does development. It has been a learning experience just to say like, okay, somebody someday will tell you, your toolbox is shit. Make sure that you're ready for that and either be ready to say, no, you're wrong for these reasons, or just say, you're right for those reasons and you're wrong for those, and keep, I'll use my experience and my knowledge to just say, like, here's the best of both worlds, and make sure to use the right tool at the appropriate time.
Well, I think where the toolbox analogy falls apart is it's not really a toolbox that is changing. It's you have the toolbox that you've used for, let's say, 5 years, and it's right there next to you. And then an alien comes by and drops by their alien toolbox, and it's right next to it. And there's some stuff that sort of looks like a wrench, but it's not exactly a wrench. And then there's other weird space stuff you've never seen before, and you're like, what the fuck is this shit? And then
oh my goodness, I'm still laughing about the alien toolbox, but go on.
But eventually the aliens will just eat us all, and then we'll have to use their tools and it'll be great. So you might as well get used to them right now. Wait, I don't think this analogy works anymore.
It does not. But I think we'll end on that.
Oops.
No, that's fine. So yeah, if I conclude the development part of this recap, is personally, 2015 has been a challenging but really interesting year. And I wanted to maybe touch on those challenges that I had too. And those were a little bit intertwined with me also questioning some of my either development or personal workflows. So, yep, 2015 was really interesting for that. And hopefully, and what will be interesting regarding 2016 is how do I use this knowledge? And I'm pretty happy about it. Yay!
Awesome.
Good.
So if you want to find show notes for this episode, you can go to limitlesspossibility.net/29.
Yes, if the internet copes with us, because Skype does not. And maybe when you will try to go to the show notes, the internet will not. So
maybe
hopefully
the alien toolbox just screwed with our server.
Exactly. So hopefully you might get the normal version of Limitless Possibility or the alien one. We don't know. But yes, it is episode 29.
Yeah. You can also find all of our episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. You can find the podcast as a whole at limipo_podcast. Or you can find me at Sakurina on Twitter. That's Sakurina, and Nicolivier is at
Luconouche, LucconouChe.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks. Bon, c'est ça, ça va pas bien ce soir?